This is Spotlight on Lead Poisoning, brought to you by Southern United Neighborhoods, a nonprofit that works on environmental issues and helps people buy their own homes and fix their credit. Call them at 1-800-239-7379 or go on the web at southernunitedneighborhoods.org for more information. My name is Marie.
There are so many issues with sewage and waterboard that we need to get organized to fight against. They almost seem overwhelming, but if we stand united and we don't continue to sweep the issues under the rug, and as long as we bring them to the surface and say we won't ignore that they're there and doing damage and threatening the quality of life of the people of New Orleans, then we can fight this thing and do something about it. One of those issues is lead in the water. Sewage and Water Board refuses to admit that there is any harmful degree of lead in the water, but we know, and at least I hope you know, that any amount of lead in the water is too much lead in the water, and we can do something about that. So tonight, we have a panel that is going to both bring forward the issue and why we need to fight and why we need to bring this issue to light, and also give some reasonable solutions or actions to what we need to do. And that question is also for us as well, too. How do we get organized to bring this to the surface and make sure that it is not continuing to harm, especially our children and elderly within New Orleans? So with no further ado, I'm excited to have Brother Kone, who is helping to facilitate this discussion with our panelists here, who was my partner in crime, was behind me when I went to jail. And only reason he went is because he tried to hold him back. And so I just am forever indebted, and it was so such a calming for me to see you walking into jail behind me. And so thank you for being there and what you did. All right. Panelists, if we just begin with introducing yourselves, we'll start here to my left and go on down, and then we'll finish with Mr. Kone, and Kone will conduct the discussion. Please, to my left.
Deborah Campbell.
Everybody, please use the microphone.
Deborah Campbell. I'm the Upper Ninth Ward Chairperson for A Community Voice, and we are here tonight to discuss Sewage and Water Board and a lawsuit that's in place for them.
Good evening, y'all. Pepper Roussel, Founding Director of Culinaria Center for Food Law Policy and Culture.
Can I just make a comment real quick? I had the French Quarter wedding chapel in the quarter, and then I had to have my water tested 3 times by sewage and water. The last time you sent them a letter, the lead amount in the water was legally able for them to leave them.
Okay, thank you for that. We're going to have time for comments in just a little bit after our panel gets done presenting. Also, too, if you have comments or questions, please write them down on the index cards that are located next to or inside of buckets to the right of the stage. And is there one to the left over there, too? And to the left of the stage. At any time, please fill out one of those, because our panelists will be open to answering questions, but they must come in this form. Write them down on the next card, print them so that we can read your sometimes illegible handwriting, print them very clearly so that we can read them, and then if you want to ask the question yourself, write your name on it. If you don't care whether you ask the question, then don't write your name on it. When you do ask the question, you get this mic, you got exactly 90 seconds to ask that question, or we're going to use this right here to pull it back. All right, exactly 90 seconds if you ask it yourself. All right, I'm sorry. Please continue with introductions.
Hi, I'm Adrienne Katner. I'm an assistant professor at the School of Public Health and Environmental and Occupational Health at LSU Health Sciences Center.
And I am Kone, and after that glowing presentation done by Reverend Mannin, on my behalf, I am practically speechless and do not know if I can carry on with this endeavor. However, I will give it my best shot. I want to take this opportunity to welcome each and every one of you all here to the world-famous Cafe Istanbul in the Healing Center right here on St. Claude Avenue. And tonight we are going to, at this portion of the program, going to be discussing the issue of the sewage and water board and the lead, the controversy of the lead situation. I want to thank my panelists for making time to participate, Ms. Deborah Campbell, Dr. Adrian Katner, and Ms. Pepper Roussel. Hopefully I enunciated all your names correctly. And I'm not embarrassed to be corrected, okay? So feel free. My mama brought me up right. Okay, so moving right along to the list of questions here. What I'd like to first do is to share a fantasy that I have. This is the fantasy, okay? This is preliminary to the actual discussion. Okay, I looked at the list of the members of the Sewage and Water Board, I looked at the list and the position that each member of the board held. And I was particularly astonished to find two people that ought to be here. Well, actually, the whole board ought to be here. But two in particular, and these two individuals listed, are Alejandra Guzman. She is a consumer and community advocate on the board, Sewage and Water Board. The other individual is Joe Peshard, also listed as a consumer and community advocate on the Sewage and Water Board. Will these two individuals please stand and join us on the stage, because you ought to be up here. Where art thou? Okay. All right, well, that sort of speaks for itself. I'm curious, I can't help but to think, how did these people, who supposedly purportedly represent the community, how did they get on the Sewage and Water Board? Did they just volunteer and say, I'm a community representative? Did they get appointed? As we go along, hopefully some of our panelists could share you all's observation as to those two individuals. If you know any of the folks that's specifically on the Sewage and Water Board. Okay, that said, I'd like to open it up now to the panelists with my first question. And my first question is, what is lead? All right, it's in two parts. And we're just walking through the basic to set the foundation here. What is lead? The source or the sources of lead?
Lead is a heavy metal, and it's naturally occurring. But it persists in the environment forever, basically. In terms of water, the source of lead is from plumbing. Biggest source of lead in water is from lead service lines, which New Orleans has all over the city. But there's also lead in brass faucet fixtures and other and lead solder that's in your premise plumbing.
Anyone else care to respond as to lead? What is it and the sources of it?
So, lead comes from a lot of different places that you probably would not expect. There's lead found in car batteries. There's lead that's found in crystal. So if anybody remembers registering for lead crystal, that's not just for funsies. It's actual lead. It's also found in some cans, imports. There was lead that was found notoriously found in paint. It is has been removed from gas that is for automobiles, but is still permitted in airplane or airline. So it's found in a lot of different places. It's really about the concentration, because it's not that you will never. And so I defer to a scientist, because that's not who I am. It's not that you'll ever be able to get away from lead. We cannot remove lead, but what can happen is that you diminish the exposure to lead, the consumption of lead.
All right, thank you all, panelists. Can lead be removed? Well, first of all, before I ask that question, how does lead get into its sources that you all have mentioned into the human body? How is that facilitated?
With regards to water, you drink it. That's an easy one. Water is the biggest source, especially for children who are being fed with formula that's reconstituted with tap water. Children who are exploring their world with their hands and mouths often get it through ingestion or inhalation of soil when they're playing, also active children, but also through the peeling of paint, old paint. Prior to, what was it, 1986, there was a certain amount of lead allowed into paint. It's still allowed in commercial paints, but not in residential paints. But it tastes very sweet. And so if you have a really bright old paint on your wall, sometimes they'll explore it, and if they like it, they'll start eating it. That's another big source. Food is one source that's really been unrecognized until lately. EPA has come out and said food is a big source of lead in our diet. Toys, teething toys.
Yeah.
We've found it in toys that are imported.
So when folks think about children, for instance, eating paint chips, you think of a child who's just sitting and peeling it off of like old walls, and that's not necessarily the case. As Adrian, Dr. Katner mentioned, the paint was permitted, right, to have lead in it until, I mean, not too terrible, within all of our lifetimes, right? There are still a number of ways that it becomes airborne and you can ingest it. If there is somebody who is sanding the side of the house, right, it then becomes airborne, but it's got to go somewhere. So ordinarily, it just settles into the soil, and when you track through it, it can end up at the bottom of your shoes, and then if you don't remove your shoes before you enter the house, it ends up on the floor in the house. And so curious children, pets, they're all very they touch a lot of things and then from their hands into their mouths, right? So it happens in a lot of different ways. In fact, the way that Dr. Katner and I met was my question about what happens to the food that we either grow here or we wash in water that has lead or other heavy metals. And that's a super big question that we don't necessarily have an answer to, but the how you get it inside of yourself is some sort of consumption.
Thank you. Once lead gets into the human body, what happens? How does it manifest itself?
So in children absorb lead a lot better than adults. And it goes to the brain. It impacts just about every organ system in the body. But for developing children, what we're most concerned about is their exposure can cause developmental problems, cognitive delays, attention deficit disorders, educational problems, depression, a lot of different things. So. For adults, it's a little, it's very subtle. You know, these are things that we see in New Orleans children everywhere. And so it's not easy to recognize, oh, that person must be lead poisoned. You really have to kind of bring that child to the doctor to have their blood lead levels checked. And then that is really only an indicator of what they were exposed to recently.
Oh, what does it do to your body? All right, so lead is a bioaccumulative metal, so you don't get rid of it, right? So even if you go on a diet or you work out a lot, it just kind of stays in there. For African Americans, this is particularly harmful because for whatever reason, African Americans absorb lead much more efficiently, much better than other races, and so it then gets put into the bloodstreams. And you can see those aggression issues and the inattentiveness, impulse control disorders that are also indicators or symptoms of other diseases or conditions or even disorders is the word that I'm looking for, that we have a tendency to medicate children for. And often, especially in African American children, when the child does not respond to the medication, they are labeled as incorrigible or morally failed, right? So if you have a child who has been misdiagnosed as being having ADHD, and when in fact this child has bioaccumulated lead for whatever, however it is that they got it, I pass no judgments. What ends up happening is that child ends up on the school to prison pipeline that much faster. For adults, it does. There have been a lot of studies that have connected to livers and kidneys.
Reproductive outcomes.
Yeah,
I mean, the list is very long.
Yeah, it's a lot.
But that is a big concern, reproductive outcomes in women, and especially women, because you're bioaccumulating it throughout your whole life, the chances of you exposing your fetus are very high. It can travel through the placenta, across, you know, there's no blood-brain barrier at this point, it's still developing. So that's the biggest point of concern right there. Reproductive outcomes, you know, we're still learning about. At the very lowest levels that you can detect in water, in blood, we're seeing reproductive outcomes. So this is something that we need to, you know, be aware of. A lot of women don't know that you can accumulate this in your body throughout your life.
Can I interject a question real quick? Are children and adults, especially children in schools, being routinely tested for lead poisoning?
You have to ask the pediatrician to test that.
Okay.
The state of Louisiana.
The state of Louisiana started requiring two tests, two screenings before the age of 5. I've talked to pediatricians that work at LSU that didn't even know that that was a requirement.
No.
We actually did a survey of New Orleans pediatricians who didn't think lead was a problem anymore. The problem with it is you usually, you know, the mother has to ask for the screening. And this is something that, you know, Medicare will pay for. And it should be provided at year one is when you want to do it, at the beginning. And if they have a problem, then you can look at the sources that they might be exposed to and sort of weed through them. There's a problem.
Thank you.
My concern is in minorities, it's mostly overexposure to lead. For some reason, the housing that we are provided with for rental purposes, they have high levels of lead in their fixtures and all. So that's one of the reasons that I think minorities are higher risk for lead poisoning. Another thing, I'm the mother of an autistic son, 35 years old, and I wonder if the lead in what he had to come up with, or the lead that I passed on to him through my pregnancy, could have contributed to his autism. Because they are saying brain damage, and they are saying ADHD, which is closely related. So all of this comes into effect as far as I'm concerned. And we need to get to the bottom of it, so that we can clear out these lead lines in the city, so that we can start to heal what damage has been done to us and our children. A lot of deaths. We're not sure what's going on with our consumption of water and mainly vegetables, that the water is spread on, that could cause some of these deaths that we're not sure why it happened. A lot of organs are affected by it. You know, they tell us we are diabetic. Then is the pancreas being affected by the lead? So all of this has come into play. And that's my concern.
Thank you. Ms. Roussel mentioned that once lead is in the human body, it cannot be removed. Is that correct?
There is a half-life of lead in blood of about a month. The half-life of lead, in, it usually goes into the bone, to hard tissues like the teeth, the bones. That half-life is, I believe, it's 20 years. So what that means is it's going to take you decades to remove that lead. And that is a concern because as you get older, your bones start to break down. You're starting to leach that back out. And now they're looking at studies at early life exposures and later life cognitive problems like dementia. So these are early studies. We don't have, you know, the facts yet, but this is a problem that we're considering now. There's like two peaks for people, basically, when you're a child because you absorb it so well. And then when you're a pregnant woman, because you start to leach it out when as your fetus needs more calcium. And then in menopause and as you start aging, when it starts to leach out of your bones.
Okay, thank you again. How does one live after being lead poisoned? How does one live with that, or does one live with it?
Most people who have been exposed to lead poisoning or lead contamination don't know, which is why it's so important. So to back up two steps, we do have screenings in the state of Louisiana for children. Those screenings come really, really early. If you are either a parent who is not necessarily looking for lead poisoning, the markers may not be something that will trigger a panic for you. If you have a pediatrician who does not think that lead poisoning is a problem, it may be more difficult in order to, for you to get the lead blood lead level testing done, because even though there is a reimbursement, even though they can be paid for it, it's not necessarily something that is considered emergent or something that we really, really, really need to pay close attention to, like diphtheria, or measles shots, or your chicken pox, right? It's something that it feels very, very nebulous, very out there, very existential, like climate change. It's coming, but we don't necessarily feel it in this particular doctor visit today. As you get older, and you start exhibiting, or the child starts exhibiting delays, or issues with being still. Those can also be attributed to other things. It's not until much later or something that's extreme that you will even begin to start thinking about having your blood tested, which is why getting blood lead level tests is so incredibly important. In broad strokes, once the neurological damage is done, it is simply done. So to make sure that the infants, that the children, as they're entering school, are tested is the only way that you're going to know is by having the tests done.
I'll just add that there is no treatment for lead poisoning. There's only, all you can do is ameliorate the problems. So there's education that you can do. There's things you can eat to reduce your exposure, to increase your excretion, but there is no treatment. And there's no safe level.
Okay. Unfortunately, I have to ask this question. You know, some folks may say, well, duh. Well, that's okay. I'm willing to take that chance. But does everyone agree? What do I mean, everyone? Scientists, researchers, political leaders, business and corporation, do they all agree that lead is bad for you?
Scientists now agree. So the CDC has acknowledged in 2012 no safe level of lead exposure. Even the lowest levels that we can measure in blood has some significant impact that we can measure. Now, not a lot of people have caught up with that. Public health practitioners, medical providers aren't really cognizant of the latest developments in the science literature. And unfortunately, scientists, we don't do a really good job of communicating these issues to the public. And so it's still getting out there. So we're still getting that information out to the public and to political representatives and healthcare providers. This is very important that it gets out to them too.
You have been listening to Spotlight on WAMF LP New Orleans on 90.3 FM and streaming at WAMF.org. A recording of this broadcast and subsequent broadcasts are available at SouthernUnitedNeighborhoods.org.